Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Connecting Faith. Neil Stavem is on vacation, a well-deserved vacation. I don't know where he is, but I hope he's having a good time. This is Bill Arnold sitting in with George Fraser. Today we are batting cleanup today. This is it, George. It's our last day to fill in for Neil.
It's been fun, Bill.
It has been fun.
It has been fun. I'm looking forward to today's show, too. It's going to be
too.
Great.
Me too. George, tell our listeners we usually appear Sundays at 5 p.m.
That's new for us, Bill.
That is
new
for us.
We started the time slot last week. We're on Real Recovery. And what Real Recovery is about is we believe all Christians are in recovery from our old behaviors, and you don't have to be an addict or alcoholic. When we meet not the higher power, but the highest power of Jesus Christ, we have redemption, we have forgiveness of our sins, and we have a new life. And we talk about that every week.
Excellent. Well, we're going to have a great show today.
I'm looking forward to it, Bill.
Yes, we've already been deputized.
This guy with a gun in our studio, so whatever he wants to do, I think we go with it.
We have a man with a gun in the studio today. So we have the Ramsey County Sheriff, Matt Bostrom, is with us today.
Bostrom.
I said that wrong.
Yeah, you did.
You know, I had a mental block. Yeah. I said to myself, don't say it wrong. And I started off by saying it wrong. Aaron, let's start over. There we go.
Can we roll this again?
Yeah, let's start over. Anyway, Matt received his formal education right here at Northwestern College. And then he went on to the University of St. Thomas and got a master's degree. And then he went to Hamline and got a Doctor of Public Administration. He's a graduate of the FBI National Academy and a certified State of Minnesota Emergency Manager. So, George, not only could he outsmart you on a test in school, but he could split your lip open with a knuckle sandwich.
It's got my attention.
And I would like to see that happen because I've never really wanted to have a co-host.
Okay.
So, Matt, welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show, Matt.
I think it's great to be here.
He break a law there? I think he did. Yeah.
I broke a law? Yeah. I didn't break a law.
You misspelled law? You mispronounced his name, and then you threatened me.
Well, I'm nervous.
So am I.
No, I mean, you got a guy with a gun here, and I'm thinking I mispronounced his name. He could pull the weapon on me.
No, I don't think he'd do that.
You don't know that, George. You do not know that.
Correct.
All right, let's get down to some serious questions right away.
Well, you know, what I wanted to ask
I was going to ask the first question.
Well, you said serious questions.
Well, I think I have the first serious question.
Okay, go ahead.
So if you would just pipe down for just a minute, I'd appreciate it. Okay, Matt, when I look at arrest photos, it appears that your chances of getting arrested get substantially increased if you're wearing an orange jumpsuit.
That is exactly right. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So
you
when
go.
You see people walking around with an orange jumpsuit, in all likelihood, they're about to be arrested.
There you go. All right, George,
that's
now you asked something.
That's a good question.
I thought it was a good question.
Well, you know, and I used to go to the Ramsey Jail for the Salvation Army, and they wear orange jumpsuits with orange socks.
Okay.
But what I wanted to ask, I think the greatest evangelical tool that we have in our country is the Department of Corrections. And people change their lives because of what happens. And you're on the front line of that. Do you feel that's a real effective evangelical tool?
Yeah, George, I think it's an amazing opportunity. One of the things we talk about in our detention facility, and maybe it merits just a little bit of an explanation, how a sheriff's detention facility might be different than a state correctional facility. What I mean by that is that in a sheriff's department out of our 87 counties, someone that gets arrested in that county needs to be statutorily turned over to the custody of the sheriff to await their day in court. And oftentimes they might get that the very next day, or it might be sometime in the future. But we hold people for pre-sentence types of things, so they haven't been found guilty of anything yet. Well, that range in stay could be for 24 hours to even 6 days in my facility. But nonetheless, one of the things we do, and I've noticed this to be true, and whether it's a workhouse facility or even at a state correctional facility, is that the men and women coming through that door, I tell my staff, don't lose sight of the fact that that's somebody's mom, that's somebody's dad, that's an aunt, an uncle, a brother, a sister, a cousin. That's somebody that has value, and that we need to be attuned to the fact that one of those days when they come through, remember, they're coming through there on the worst day of their life. So they're probably not going to be particularly happy. But oftentimes they come through there and they say, I don't want to do this anymore. We need to be attuned, and I want my staff to be ready to hear when they hear that, to respond and to connect them with community volunteers. And oftentimes those community volunteers, it's amazing how receptive to faith. Almost oftentimes when they say, I don't want to do this anymore, they're sensing a call that they're supposed to make a seismic change in their life.
Yeah, it's a big deal. And, Bill, they have a lot of Bible studies and volunteers that go in. I would think, Matt, it's got to be hard knowing what these people are charged with. And you kind of have to go to Scripture and go, we're supposed to love our neighbor as ourselves, even though I don't like what they did. Is that challenging sometimes?
Yes, it can be. I think if we go back to a correctional facility, oftentimes folks there, for the most part, are a bit more contemplative. They really have time to think. And it's through those times that oftentimes I think the Holy Spirit prompts them. And,
okay.
And so, again, the key to our staff is to say when that happens, let's be prepared to provide a response. Who can we connect this person with? And so that's how we try to function within our facility.
Well, I know some of the people that work there, Cindy Davies and Bill, and I think Cindy's a deputy now. But they really have it out there that they are to help these people stop doing what they're doing.
Yeah, I don't know why you name drop, George. There's no need for that. You know,
it's a couple of my high quality staff, so I think it's appropriate. He didn't speak out of turn. They are fantastic people. Right. In fact, you're right. Cindy was just promoted to sergeant, so now she's actually official supervisor down in our detention facility.
Yeah, so there, Bill.
All right, you just got back at me there. It's so fascinating to think that a man of faith is going to be involved at a level that you're at and that you're going to be caring about everybody that comes through your facility and that you have a heart for the Lord and a willingness to have sensitivity towards every person. I think that's a very encouraging piece of news for me.
Well, it is, Bill, and I know you volunteered down at the Salvation Army. We see a lot of the same people, and they are all God's kids, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly right. And I think... along those lines, I thought I was going to mention a little bit earlier, and it has to do with, I'll come back to that thought. I'll go back to the connections that we have with our volunteer groups, that we've seen a huge expansion where we've gone from 40 to up to 90 different individuals from a variety of different backgrounds that have chosen to say, you know, we don't know why, but we feel like we're supposed to be here and offer support for the men and women that are coming through our facility. And to that end, what I've challenged my staff is it's one thing to provide a safe environment because that is our charge. We need to keep people safe until they have their day in court. And sometimes that means keeping them safe from themselves, sometimes safe from others. But that's our primary charge. But I said that's a small measure. So let's make sure that we can accomplish that mission. But the second piece is how what are we doing to make sure that those men and women aren't coming back? And let's say that we only did 1 in 10. And we had a 10% decrease across the board in courts, in families that are involved in the criminal justice system, ultimately going into some other federal or state facility. What if we had a reduction because we were attuned and somebody got redirected and didn't come back? And so that actually has become part of our submission within our detention facility.
I like that goal, Bill.
It's a great goal.
You know, to stop the behavior. I know that you have at least one chaplain there, Seth Evans, and people are getting the message of the power of Jesus Christ. Do you have to be careful on that? Do we have to be politically correct, or how do we work that?
Mm-hmm. Seth's story is a terrific story. In fact, he is one of our chaplains at the Ramsey County Detention Center, and his story started after, I can't remember, I want to say like his 10th arrest. And it was at the Ramsey County Detention Center that he had that moment where he said, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to be a dad. I want to be a responsible husband. Ultimately got connected to Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge. And the Lord placed a call in his life and called him back to that very facility. And his ability to connect with the men and women there now is, well, as you can imagine, he understands where they are in a way that anybody else coming in trying to do good can't connect. So Seth's story is just terrific.
Yeah, what a redemption story. Now, you were a policeman with St. Paul for many years. How long were you that?
I was with St. Paul for nearly 29 years. Started out, just turned 21, and ended up landing in the police academy and spent the first 10 years as a patrol officer, variety of assignments there. Then got promoted to detective, served in our juvenile crimes unit. And then later promoted to sergeant, and then I was serving as a street supervisor. Did that for another 5 years, then got promoted to lieutenant, and then kind of the administrative part of my life continued. Ultimately finished the last 6 years of my career, was part of the senior management team with Chief John Harrington when he served as the St. Paul chief, finished my career as the assistant chief of administration and Homeland Security.
And then the sheriff is an elected position.
Right.
You don't get appointed sheriff, you get elected.
It's a unique thing with the sheriff that, for me, being a lifelong public servant, in many ways somewhat of a Gideon story, I was quite surprised that I'd be sitting here talking to you as sheriff. The idea that I would ever run for office. My father was involved and still is involved in city politics. He's been on the St. Paul School Board. He'd been on the St. Paul City Council. And when I saw what he went through, I thought, boy, I'm glad I'm in law enforcement and I don't ever have to be in politics. The old deal, you got to be careful what you say you're not
right.
going to do. But it was clear the Lord had his hand on this, and for this time I'm supposed to be serving in this capacity.
Fantastic. Well, we're going to take a very short break and come back. We're going to talk more to our sheriff, who's in the studio with a gun. So George and I are on our very best behavior today.
We're trying, aren't we?
We are trying. Our shirts are tucked in. We've got our deputy badges on. We're on our best behavior.
Junior deputy, right?
Junior
here,
deputy,
Bill.
Yeah. I'm gonna hang on to this. This is going to be worth something someday.
Put it on your car.
You're listening to Connecting Faith. Bill Arnold and George Fraser sitting in today for Neil. We'll be back in a minute on Faith Radio.
Trisha and Ben were excited to deliver their second child, but the day before their sweet child was due, the doctors couldn't find a heartbeat. Hey, this is Debbie Griffith with Everyday Matters. So Trish was induced and gave birth to baby Brendan, perfectly formed but already in the arms of Jesus. The following Sunday, their pastor brought a message of hope from 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. The grave isn't the last word. Since Jesus died and broke loose from the grave, God will certainly bring back to life those who have fallen asleep in Jesus. Jill Pearson, who shared this story, is a dear friend of Trish. Jill is also a songwriter who said, "I decided to write this song for all the women like myself and Trish who are acquainted with the loss of a pregnancy. Now I lay you down to sleep, oh my baby, sweet and fair. Until we're caught up in the clouds, I take your hand and we meet God in the air. Until then, I'll miss you. Until then, I'll love you. I can't wait to see you every day." Find encouragement for your day at DebbieGriffith.com.
This is the day when the lost are found. This is the day for a new beginning. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound. Again, you hear all the angels are singing. This is the day when life begins.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Real Recovery. Listen to me. That was just a knee-jerk reaction, George.
It was a good plug for our show,
It was
Bill.
A good plug for our show. Real Recovery happens Sunday at 5 o'clock. George Fraser and I speak about recovery from addiction. Is it George Fraser and me?
I'm not used to having my name first. It's Bill Arnold and George Fraser in my world, so just glad to be included.
Yeah. So welcome back to the program. We are having a very interesting conversation today with the sheriff of Ramsey County. We're going to be talking about
Matt Bostrom.
I was going to say that, George.
No, you were going to say Matt Bostrom.
I was not going to say Matt Bostrom.
Again.
No, I was not. You're bossy today.
I am a little.
Yeah, you're a little bossy.
Didn't get food to eat, so.
Well, you're buying lunch afterwards.
Okay.
Yep.
I'll do that.
So if you have a question, you'd like to ask the sheriff something, and it can be any question about law enforcement. It doesn't have to be anything about specifically Ramsey County. I think you can pretty much answer anything. I know we all have lots of questions about law enforcement. I have questions, George, where I'm going to ask a little bit later on in the show. I'm curious about how 911 works because I know you use it when they don't get your McNuggets right.
Correct.
So I want to know when is it appropriate. You know, it's sometimes interesting because when you hear a 911 report and you go, well, just get here, and they keep asking questions. And isn't it true that they're just gathering information?
That's exactly right. When someone calls 911, some people, they get really frustrated with the dispatcher or the 911 operator with those calls because they're like, would you quit asking me these questions and please dispatch a squad or an ambulance or a fire truck? And what they don't realize is that they're good at multitasking. What's happened is that by that original call, and once they heard what it was, if it's a crime in progress or something like that, they initiate that incident and are seamlessly sending that out to an officer, a deputy, in real time. And what by asking the additional questions, they're giving the officers and those deputies pre-arrival instructions. So that's the reason they keep you on the line and keep asking you questions. It's not like they're going to have you answer 20 questions. Then if you get all the questions right, then they'll dispatch the officer. So that's one of the things that I like people to know. So when that happens, don't get frustrated with the person answering that call. The squad is already sent. Now, on the administrative side, what I ask our dispatchers and others to do is, could you please tell someone at the moment you dispatch a squad, let them know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because what they do is they get in that work zone and they're just taking care of business, trying to get information, keep people on the phone, and give pre-arrival instructions. In the midst of that verbal transaction, they sometimes forget to tell that person the police officers and the deputies are on their way.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
That's very interesting.
The question I had for you is, why don't the door handles work inside the car on the back?
Yeah, that is interesting, and it's interesting, George, that you'd know that.
It's a lucky guess.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about, George.
I know you don't. He's never even had a speeding ticket.
No, I haven't.
It's the lime green Prius in the parking lot.
It's called Silver Pine Mica. It's not lime green.
Okay.
Yeah, so get that right.
I apologize.
Apology accepted.
You know, I think of law enforcement as a ministry position because it does get a lot of people, you know, into the kingdom, but also keeps us safe. And we read in the Bible that greater love has no man than he that lays down his life for another. How many of your fellow officers or guys who reported to you have lost their lives since you've been sheriff and since you've been a cop?
Well, when I look at in my career with St. Paul, we lost three during my time there, and then most recently then in the county. In the last year, Josh Lino, we lost him. And then just prior to that, Sergeant Joe Bergeron from Maplewood, and then Richard Crittenden from the North St. Paul Police Department. So both when serving in St. Paul, several, and then more recently, just in the last few years within the county, we've lost some other wonderful men.
It's a very dangerous job, and every day you don't know what you're going to run into.
Yeah, I think that's one of the challenges. People sometimes wonder with police officers, they're like, why is that police officer standoffish? And they say, boy, those cops kind of seem paranoid. And I'm like, well, paranoia is if you imagine that somebody's out to get you and they're really not. It's really not paranoia for deputies and police officers. They know that most people aren't out to get them, but there are some. Mm-hmm. So therefore, which encounter might be that time where someone might be looking to do harm in some fashion. And so for them to do that quick judgment, having first met someone, whether it's at a traffic stop, just a conversation at a mall or something when they're investigating another crime, or at a major event where there's perhaps a robbery or something like that, they have to make those decisions very, very fast. And oftentimes people say, boy, that, you know, that officer, the deputy sure was standoffish. Well, there's a reason. They're going through a whole lot of assessments nonverbally mm-hmm. to try to determine, is this someone that's a victim, a friend, or a foe?
So you can never relax on the job.
No, and it is one of the challenges. Most people don't realize that what we're now seeing is that law enforcement officers at about a 35% rate, if they have a career in law enforcement, they are susceptible to post-traumatic stress. And so we're seeing post-traumatic stress disorder at about a 35% rate for our law enforcement officers right now. And it's not something like Battlefield where, you know, it's something that happens in the theater of action. They've been assigned there for, you know, 3 to 4 years. The reality of it is that this is something that accumulates over time. So it has a different, but it still has the same manifestations of sleep disorders, depression, other types of things.
Divorces.
Yep, exactly.
Alcoholism. Mm-hmm. Tough job.
Very tough mm-hmm. job. What kind of training do you go through when you're trying to discern the truth versus a lie when you're speaking to people? Because I would imagine you get lied to all day long.
Yeah, there are people that, should I say it, I'll be diplomatic, they aren't forthright all the time.
Right.
Or they do want to cast themselves in the best light possible. So they oftentimes they'd say, well, I didn't lie, I just didn't tell you that part.
Mm.
So the challenges then become, it's almost refreshing. I'll tell, you know, a cop story is times where I pulled somebody over for driving through a red light. In fact, I remember downtown St. Paul when this occurred. And I come up to the car, I introduce myself, tell them why I stopped them, and was there a reason, that you drove through that red light? And the guy is shaking his head. He goes, I have no reason. I can't believe I did that. I am so sorry. I'm embarrassed. I said, you know what? I'll be with you in just a minute. I verified his driver's license and the vehicle information. It all matched. He had insurance information. It was so refreshing. He didn't get a ticket because it was so uncommon that I had somebody that actually knew what had happened. They were contrite. They admitted to it. And that's the purpose for traffic stops is to, if somebody's driving that poorly and they don't know why they got stopped, that actually is a problem. Okay, because I always had my, not all cops do this, but I always had three strikes. If you make three mistakes in front of a marked car, something is very wrong with your driving. And so I need to draw some attention to that because you may think you're a great driver. Oh, by the way, everyone I've stopped has always thought they're a great driver. It's the other guy that's the bad driver.
Right, right. Yeah, I think I got stopped once and the officer said, why are you going so fast? And I said, because I didn't see you. That makes sense, doesn't it, George?
You didn't get a ticket.
Oh, no, I didn't get a ticket. At least you're honest. Okay, what kind of driving training do police officers go through? I mean,
there's a course that we have. It's called Emergency Vehicle Operations and EVOC. Of course, we masters of acronyms. It seems like in public service, but so we go through our Emergency Vehicle Operations course. And that is something that's required, one, to get the job, and then second, you have to maintain those skills. And so it used to be every 3 years we had to go through and prove that we had that capability. They've changed that a little bit, that once you hit that benchmark, that because you're driving so much, you don't lose those skills as rapidly as you would in other things. So literally you take a whole day, and we go out. There's a few tracks around the state that we can go to where we literally practice managing your car in slippery conditions, making sure that you don't overdrive the vehicle because you can think and press the gas a lot faster than your car can stop. And that's the other part, is understanding what that looks like and then learning other strategies to stop that, stop the pursuit. So whether that's using stop sticks, we would use that. There's another maneuver called, and perhaps you see it, on TV when they show some of the police cars pulling up alongside and giving that car a little bit of a nudge on the rear quarter panel and getting it to spin. That's actually called a pit maneuver, PIT. And we use that as a means to stop that, and stop the chase. So there's a variety of different things that we work on.
So every time you get out of your car, do you roll over the front of your hood?
I don't open the door. I climb through the window, roll over the hood, and then do some, and then land. Able to stick that landing, just like a gymnast.
So when you're watching movies and television, I mean, how silly is most of police?
My wife, what a great woman. Cheryl's terrific. Yeah. Because she endures these movies with him, because I sometimes have a running commentary.
Oh, yeah.
But I think being a cop's wife, I don't know if how you become one, over the years, and we've been married now for more than 30 years. She can read my mind, and now she's the one. I don't even have to say anything.
She's doing your lines?
Come on, that doesn't happen like that.
Yeah.
But anyway, you're right. And so, I've learned entertainment is entertainment.
Right, right.
And so I accept it for what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What trends have you seen that have changed since you've been on, such as drug usage and...
Yeah, I could talk about the technological trends. To me, that's quite interesting, but more to your question, George, drug use is something that continues to be an issue for our society. I have to say the most abused drug is still alcohol. Most people leave that out. They talk about legalizing other things, and they say, what does that mean? I said, could we get our arms around our response to the legal drugs before we start introducing others? You look at the lives lost to tobacco use, you look at the lives lost and shortened and all sorts of other things that happen because of alcohol use. If we can master that so that those are somehow safe, then maybe we want to consider introducing others, but let's not add other things to the mix before we've taken care of that. One of the things that's been somewhat of a surprise, and several of the sheriffs around the state have been doing what we can to get the word out, has to do with a progression that we've seen with prescription drugs and the misuse of prescription drugs. Oftentimes families, those that have had surgery or other things, you get the additional painkillers when you leave. the hospital. And oftentimes people are very smart about that. They don't overuse that. They stop using those as soon as the pain subsides.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a very short break. If you want to be part of today's conversation and ask the sheriff a question, we'd love to have you on board. The number is 1-877-933-2484. You're listening to Connecting Faith. To Connecting Faith, Bill Arnold with George Fraser. We're sitting in for Neil today. He is on the big vacation. I don't know what he's doing, but he's probably having some kind of fun. Anyway, George, you when we last left off, we were talking to Matt Bostrom, the Ramsey County Sheriff, and we were talking about kind of what's gone on in the last 5 years, so to speak. I mean, the trends in drug use, and just interesting. I mean, even stuff like bath salts, you know, you see incidences where people are, I don't even know what they're doing. Are they snorting bath salts? Or
Yeah, they're inhaling them.
They're inhaling bath salts.
Which, what's a bath salt anyway? I mean, I'm dating myself, but I mean, what in the world is a bath salt? So there's a lot of things that can fit under that that description. And so, you know, maybe I'll kind of go back to that
Please
earlier
do.
Thought that
yep.
I had, and then we can maybe touch on that bath salt issue, because really these are the two kind of things. One is the misuse of prescription drugs. And like I say, people oftentimes, they do it, they use those heavy narcotics, the morphine derivatives, successfully. They stop using them as soon as the pain is manageable. Well, oftentimes, most people don't use those prescriptions fully. And so there can be other people in their house that say, well, you know, I've heard something about this, that this could be good. And pretty soon it doesn't take very long that when you're not sick and you start using those, the addictive nature of those skyrockets. Well, when those run out, what they found is that it's cheap. Instead of trying to do scams and with doctors shopping and other types of things, it's cheaper to actually go out and find heroin and get a similar high. I would have never thought we would have seen this, but there are many people out there that believe heroin can be used recreationally. That is absolutely not true. And years ago, if we go back a generation, heroin would have ranged between 50 to 60, maybe 70% of your purity rate. Right now, what we're pulling off the street, it's difficult to find anything less than 90% pure. Therefore, the margin for lethality is slim. And so what's showing up for overdoses, deaths, and other types of things are skyrocketing in comparison to a lot of the other drugs out there.
That's scary, Bill.
It's
really
scary.
Because you see people go in, they get their shoulder fixed or their knee fixed, they get on oxys, and they're taking them, and all of a sudden if you kind of like it, and then you're an opioid addict. And we're seeing that all across the spectrum. And then guys are ODing a lot because the heroin is so pure.
And one of the things that we've done, and there's a few sheriffs in the metro area and a few other places around the state, but we have drop-off places for those that have unused prescriptions that we cooperate with Ramsey County Health. And so that if people have unused prescriptions that they're saying, you know, we don't want to flush them down the toilet or, you know, throw them in the trash, you can bring them to us. And then one of our narcotics agents goes, bags that, secures it, and then ultimately it gets disposed of along with our health department when they're getting rid of other pharmaceuticals. So we've been doing that, and it's worked out really quite well. It would remind you a little bit of, you know, the life, I don't know, Bill, do you read? But anyway, for those of us that read, I'm sorry, I couldn't help it. I was looking at him, and your eyes were glazing over, so I must be going on too long. But when you go to the library and you have that after-hours book depository, you know, you drop the book in and it's kind of a vault, the book slides in. We have the same setup at a couple of our patrol station as well as our administrative office.
Are you seeing a lot of methamphetamine still?
We're still seeing more than you want to see, which I'd hate to see any.
Right.
It has dropped, But the addictive nature to it, there's still a core group, just like cocaine and others. It's, you haven't been able to decrease it completely, but it is decreased from where it was 5 and 10 years ago.
One of the scary things that Bill and I both volunteered at the Salvation Army, Matt, and is you see the progression of first use to violent crime, mm-hmm. how quick that time is and how quickly it takes over the life.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's. I think what it's important for people to understand with a lot of the things you're ingesting, including alcohol, what alcohol is, it's a solvent. I mean, it dissolves things. So when it enters your system, it's going to start doing things to dissolve tissue, dissolve other things, brain cells, whatever that is. Well, that's true with just about every other drug. They do something to inhibit the way your brain thinks. Marijuana has things where it'll start disconnecting the way the cells in your brain connect. I mean, literally the synapses get singed on the ends. And so there's a variety of different things that cause that. And so literally you're damaging your brain, you're damaging other things, and particularly when you're under the influence, when that's in your bloodstream, what is reality for them is a huge distortion for those that aren't under the influence. And to that end, bath salts. Bath salts are chemical compounds that aren't used in baths. They're used to alter your view of the world. And so they would have many of the different hallucinogenic type of effects that they have. But again, these are chemicals, and when they enter your system, they're going to start dissolving and causing disorders in your system. And the challenge that we have in law enforcement with these bath salts is as soon as we're able to name it and say this is illegal, all they have to do is change a small chemical compound, rename it, and now we have to go through that whole process again. So it's been quite challenging for law enforcement to stop people from hurting themselves with these things.
Yeah. We're going to take a caller. We've got a caller on line one. Lisa, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
Thanks for being on the program.
First of all, Sheriff, thank you for the work you do. We know that Scripture says that people in authority in law enforcement are a minister of good on our behalf, and so we just want to thank you for that. And also, I have six boys, and you were talking a little while ago about telling a truth from a lie, and I think I'm getting kind of good at that the longer I'm a mother. But I was just wondering, you know, at different times, they're all the way from 4 years old up to 21 years old, and at different times, you know, they've expressed an interest in, you know, being a policeman or being in law enforcement, and I guess I was just wondering if they would decide to pursue a career in that, what would be the best track to go? What should they do first once they graduate?
Great question, and a mom with six boys, I'm sorry, I'm not a hero. You are. My mom had three, and I see what she went through with me and my two brothers. But anyway, it's a credit to you. As far as what we're seeing in trends in hiring, and it's true in my office, that while it's not a four-year degree requirement right now to get into law enforcement in Minnesota, it's actually about 2.5 years, 2 years of college mandatory with some additional skills training, which accounts for about 2.5 years. That's the minimum requirements. The interesting thing is that I can't remember the last time in the last 5 to 10 years that we've hired a man or woman that doesn't have a bachelor's degree. And so, and then the other part that really makes them something that is appealing to be, as a candidate for hire, is the ability to know another language. Those two things, you combine a bachelor's degree with a second language, those candidates are the ones that sheriffs and police chiefs around the state are looking for.
Good question.
And then the other part is, if I can add just one last thing, is I look for character first. I believe that I can reinforce character with the men and women that I hire. It's difficult to train character. So our challenge is let's find men and women of character, let's hire and select them and reinforce that, and then train for competence. And because I need both when they hit the street. They need to have character and competence. And so being a great mom, you're taking care of the character part for us. And so we'll take care of the competence.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling.
That is a good question. And what I'm wondering is, were you a Christian growing up, Matt, and did you decide to go into this ministry because of that?
Yeah, my journey has been, came to know the Lord bedside with my mom when I was about 7.5 years old. I grew up in the Evangelical Free Church, and I remember as a result of you know, the teachings of our Sunday school teachers, you wonder if the kids really listen. So even as a little second grader back then, the only thing I didn't quite understand is that I really had this pull on my life that I was supposed to commit to something bigger than me. And I thought I needed to do that with my teacher. And to my mom's credit, when I was having trouble sleeping, you know, and I'd get up, and she, you know, what in the world? I wasn't one of those kids that once I went to bed, I followed the rules. I didn't get up. She sensed that something else was going on, and had the wisdom to say, you know, ask me that other question. You know, what's really going on? So I told her, and we took care of it right there. From that time, you know, I've done what I can to use, you know, my map as, you know, God's word, and use that to apply those principles on a daily basis, and to use that as the measure of what I'm supposed to be doing. And along that journey, when I finished high school, I did okay in mathematics. And so I was actually at the University of Minnesota at the Institute of Technology, believing I was going to be an engineer. And I had done a couple internships at a large firm here. We might know they have lots of M's in their name, at least three of them. Anyway, did interning there. Was treated really well, but had a sense of that was work I could do, but may not be the work I was supposed to be doing. So while I was trying to figure out what that was going to be, the police exam came up. I took that. I later found out that over 2,100 people had signed up for that exam. They hired 24.
Wow.
I was number 21 on that list.
Wow.
So I knew where I was supposed to be at that time, and I thought, well, okay, I'll do this. I'll probably be here 5 years. I'll finish up my bachelor's degree, and then I'll figure out what I'm really going to be, where the Lord really needs me when I grow up. And so now that's 30 years in my rearview mirror. And here I am.
That's a great story.
I love the story. It is a great story. I have a question about the whole idea of identity theft. I was a victim of identity theft about a month ago, and you know, my identity got stolen. And then after 10 minutes, they returned it because they couldn't stand pretending to be me either. But what about all the security issues that we have now and all the concerns we have as citizens about protecting our identity? And is that getting to be a bigger and bigger problem with the police and with law enforcement?
It is a major issue. It's hard for me to think of someone that I haven't spoken with where it didn't either it has happened to them or it's happened to a close family member. You don't have to go very far.
Okay.
And actually, that's where the big economic crimes are. You know, in the old days, you know, robbery of banks, that was the big crime. How often do you see that on the news? The bad guys have figured out that the penalties don't seem to be as high, and the monetary value is there. So they're in financial crimes or doing things with electronic fraud or other types of things. So it is an area that we're trying to assist the public through our crime prevention efforts to become more attuned to how can you protect your identity if you think that somehow someone has that your identity has been compromised in some way, that there are steps that you can take in order to resolve that very, very quickly. So it is a big challenge for us. There are many we could probably do a separate show on that, actually.
Okay.
But I think it's an important point for people to be very cautious on how they use the internet, be very cautious on how you use your telephone. And the old rule of thumb that we probably heard when we were kids, if it sounds too good to be true, it is.
Mm-hmm.
And if it sounds really close to being almost too good to be true, it's not true. And always verify, and when you're doing your emails, don't hit those links when it says your email is full or that some where they're from the credit card company, and if you just click here, we'll be able to help you. That's not how they function.
Okay, well, I just sent some guy from Nigeria $5,000 because I'm getting like $32 million in the mail next month, so I'm excited about that.
Yeah,
we're going to
take
a very short break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about law enforcement. So you're listening to Connecting Faith with Bill Arnold and George Fraser sitting in for Neil. We'll be back in just a minute on Faith Radio.
What are you willing to do to go beyond the call? This is Wayne Peterson, president of HCJB Global. Pastor Nahu was condemned to 13 years in Siberia. After 6 years of hard labor, he was allowed a few privileges. He began preaching the gospel on weekends.
a woman from a remote Siberian village approached him. A group of us now believe in Jesus. We have heard radio preachers read from the Bible. They say it is the Word of God. Is there such a book? Hebrews 4:12 says the Word of God is living and active and sharper than any two-edged sword. Pastor Nahu smiled. Yes, there is a book called the Bible. These books are hard to find, but I have an extra copy. With tears streaming down her face, she thanked God for His written word. Be a light to others. Go beyond the call. And then visit us online at hcjb.org.
Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Bill Arnold with George Fraser sitting in for Neil. We're talking to Matt Bostrom, who is the Ramsey County Sheriff today, and we're having a very interesting conversation about law enforcement. And, you know, I have a little bit of sheriffing experience in as much as I served process in college for a couple of years.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so, I mean, I had the same legal rights to be on the property that a sheriff would have. Is that right?
Absolutely, and I think that's one of the things. There's so many things that a sheriff's department does that they're like, now, aren't they like the police? And the answer is yes. Well, don't they do things with to help corrections in the courts? Yes. Don't they do things to help with detention and probation? Yes. There's so many things that we do by statute that people are just surprised by the dynamic nature of what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And there's times that we have to lead. There's times that in many ways we're the ligaments. I kind of laugh when I look up at the state statute because it says sheriff shall. Now, that's for us, when we hear the word shall, most of us say, well, shall we go get a cup of coffee? Well, that's not what it means. That's a must-do. That's your must-do list. So there's several pages of those, and I've often wondered with the variety of things that they ask sheriff's departments to do, it's as if they weren't sure if the cops should do it, if prosecution should do it, if courts should do it, or if it should be corrections. So in the meantime, we're going to let the sheriffs do it.
Mm.
And by the way, I don't know that they've ever not taken anything away. They just keep adding to that. And so one of the things is how we do civil process and make those services, because you don't see judges out in their robes and garbs after they sign a document. They're not the ones out there handing it out.
They're not.
They give those to other people.
Yes, and I did it for 2 years in college, and I used to think that was a great job. And looking back now, I put myself in a fairly dangerous situation. And there's no way I would go do it now. I was serving summons and complaints, eviction notices, all kinds of things, subpoenas.
Yeah, people aren't exactly glad to get those notes.
They are not happy at all.
No.
And I remember once I had to drive about 50 miles north of the city, and I was taking a summons complaint to this address, and I couldn't find it. And there was this what appeared to be a large piece of property, and there was a big fence up. And I was looking at the address, and I was going, this might be it, but I don't know. And I went to the neighbor's house and knocked on the door, and I said, I'm trying to find this address. And he goes, oh, the nudist colony.
I'm waiting for the punchline.
No, this is the real story. So whoever was running this, you know, facility was getting served, and I was the one that had to, you know, I didn't have to take my clothes off to do it. I didn't find out that out until I got in there, but, you know, it was pretty humorous.
Well, you have to have a sense of humor.
You do. And what is one of your more humorous calls you've been on in your career?
Oh, of course you ask me that. So now I've got to just think of one.
There's probably been so many.
Quickly. Well, cops have so many different stories. I think part of what we end up running into is that we run into people that I always often talk about after the midnight, you know, the midnight shift. It's an interesting group of people that suffer insomnia and then as a result of that call the police. And you would be surprised how many men and women are struggling out there. They don't ask for help. What they're struggling with is that they have issues where they can see through walls. They have issues that they're able to pick up radio waves either in their teeth or sonar, that the radar guns, there's certain types of radar guns that give them headaches. There's a variety of different things that they've come forward to say what works to stop those radar waves. So it's a very interesting conversation that you have with those folks, because the one thing, their reality is it's absolutely true. It's absolutely happening. And so It takes a skilled police officer to not be insulting, you know, determine if there's a true mental health issue here or if this is just a distortion that they're going to be okay and they're going to live with this distortion. But most law enforcement officers have a tremendous amount of stories like those.
I'm nodding because I'm listening over here, not because I know what you're talking about. But, yeah, they always have to be on guard and be kind and courteous and yet protect themselves at the same time, Bill, when there are some things that you just don't see coming, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think one of the areas that came to mind is we had a loud party call, and it was a neighbor dispute. And at that neighbor dispute, we go and tap on the door, and the neighbors explain to us that the people above them are causing problems. They're keeping them up at night, and they really need the officers to do something about it. So, you know, with that typical 2 a.m. kind of call that we get, neighbor dispute, we go upstairs, tap, tap, tap on the door. The husband and wife, I mean, it was clear we had awakened them out of REM sleep. You know, they had the eyes were trying, you could see them trying to adjust. They had serious bedhead, but were very pleasant people. And so we started to say, you know, the neighbors downstairs are, as we're saying this, there's nothing about this scene that
no
makes
connection.
Any sense.
Yeah.
We're like, this doesn't feel right. And they were wonderful. They said, officers, could you come in here for a minute? And we said, well, sure. You know, we need you to sit down. Can we tell you a little something about our neighbors downstairs? We're not sure what the problem is. But what we understand is they're sure that we're looking through the floor at them. And you can search our house. We're not looking through the floor at them or anything like that. So they were so anyway, we go back downstairs with more information. We describe and we have these people then further describe how the neighbors above them are causing them problems. And ultimately, they have a distortion that people can look through. Certain people can look through floors and walls. Now, they're otherwise employed. They have a life. They're married. I mean, they're going on about their business. But you have to mediate things like that.
Wow.
And then just the other day, you have the call where shots ring out and somebody comes out of the house. They've got the gun in their hand, and they're saying, don't shoot. I'm just removing it from the scene. So at that moment, you know, that deputy that's pulling up has to make a whole lot of decisions. And so that was something that just came up the other day for us. So you go from just an odd call on a midnight shift to a basic traffic stop all the way to shots fired. Somebody's coming out the door with a gun in their hand saying, it wasn't me. And you have to make the right decision in real time.
Yeah, George, you would make a horrible police officer. Because, I mean, I've gone to lunch with you where the waitress is super salad, and it's like a half hour later. You're trying to figure out what you're going to have.
What's your point?
No, I'm just saying. You'd make a lousy cop.
You know, I would. I made a lousy criminal, too. But what's the point of the law? If you pull your gun, you can't be trying to wound somebody, right?
I think people think that why don't you just shoot to wing their arm, shoot the gun out of their hand or those types of things. And one of the things they take police officers through early part of your training is they take you to a range and they'll put you pretty close to a target and they'll say, okay, draw and fire and hit the target in the hand. All right, now that's a stationary target. All you have to do is draw and fire from, let's say, 15 feet. Very challenging. Now imagine that hand is moving. Okay, so then they move that target ever so slightly. In the movie, they're brilliant shots. These are amazing. Going back to the Old West days, they're just remarkable. So they're really what the use of force, the way we manage use of force is when we have to do something that's going to stop and could cause great or bodily harm, we shoot to stop. And so, therefore, if you're going to the idea isn't to kill somebody, but we got to stop them immediately from doing what they're doing. Therefore, that's what we call center mass. You know, that is going to be it's going to hit vital organs. So the purpose isn't to kill, but it's to get them to stop. But as a result, when you shoot center mass, the results could be a death.
And you got a split second to make that call.
Mm-hmm. We have just a few minutes left. I'm curious. Do you ever have a day off? You can't, can you? Because You're on duty all the time, aren't you?
It's kind of funny when people ask, oh, so you're going to get the weekend off. So we're just coming off from Memorial Day. Oh, you're going to get the weekend off, Sheriff. And I smile and I say, if you mean not going to the office, my intention is not to go into the office.
Right.
But can you imagine what that would look like if I shut my phone off and I just leave for 4 days? Something happens and they said, yeah, you can't get a hold of the sheriff. He'll be back in 4 days. my phone is on all the time.
Yeah.
Well, and so those calls come in because there's an expectation, and that's why I don't think you serve in a job like this forever, that there's a time that you're called to serve, and so the phone stays on out of a sense of responsibility.
But what about just you going out for pizza with your wife, and mm-hmm. all of a sudden somebody bursts in the back door? You all of a sudden, you're on duty.
You are on duty, and it is a challenge. My wife, when we go to a restaurant, it's interesting. She'll always pick a position so that I can see the door because I enjoy the meal a whole lot better. because then I can see the comings and goings. Yeah. I can see the cash register. I can see where the people are. And it sounds crazy, but by having that awareness,
more relaxing,
keeps me
it?
Calm.
Absolutely.
Yeah, if I had my back to the door, it would be almost impossible to enjoy my meal.
Do you ever shut it off? Can you ever stop being a policeman? Can you ever stop when you're in a room looking around? Does that ever turn off?
I haven't been able to do that yet.
Okay.
So whether we come to an event here at Northwestern or if we're doing some other public event, the eyes aren't on who's on stage. The eyes are on who's in the audience. So in time, maybe, when I have the opportunity to perhaps retire, whatever that looks like, we'll see what happens. But I've heard from a lot of police officers that once you've been wired this way, that's just what you do.
How mm-hmm. weird do you think we are?
So.
I mean, he came in, he's sitting facing the door.
He's drawn his gun three times since he's been in the studio.
I saw that. He's quick.
He's very quick.
And I really appreciate the way you've situated me here, because, in fact, I can see the door,
that's
and
true.
I can see the other people
that's
here,
true.
So it works out quite well.
Keep an eye on the cash register.
It's been a lot of fun, Bill.
It's been great. There's, 15 more questions I want to ask, and we're out of time. So I don't know what to say, except we'd love to talk to you some more again. The whole idea of the sheriff's office versus the chief of police, I think there's two different distinct roles.
Yeah.
And as the sheriff, that is a very different role from chief of police, because chief of police, you're dealing with a lot more of day-to-day politics.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's interesting. I go before the voters once every 4 years. Those are the stakeholders. Did the guy keep his word or not?
Right.
And give me thumbs up or thumbs down vote. And that's it for politics, really, for a sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
Some are a little bit more active in the community, but for the most part, that's really the role. A chief, on the other hand, picture them. They work for the mayor, the city council. There's usually a budget director or city manager. Every day they have to manage in that environment. I don't have to deal with that. So
yeah.
I just get to deliver service. And what I like about county government is it really is that good government model.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for being such a wonderful guest, and thank you for the work you do. We don't know what we would do without the sheriff's department. Anyway, thank you for listening to Connecting Faith today. Have a wonderful, wonderful day. God bless everybody.